Namaste and welcome to another edition of the Bharatvartha Weekly. Thank you so much for joining us. Weekly is where we discuss the news and events from the week that was. With me, I have Ashish Chandorkar and Srivatsa Subbanna, my guests, as usual. Hi, Ashish. Hi, Vatsa. How are you guys?
Hi, Kari. Missing the election results because of the Bharatvartha Weekly today.
The great sacrifices we have to do. Huh?
Yeah.
Right. So, this was, I would say it was an eventful week. More than an eventful week from a Bharatvartha perspective, right? We put out about 5 podcasts this week, ranging from the Bengal elections to Pune against the pandemic and so on. Ashish, your thoughts?
Yeah, so I spoke to Loknath Chatterjee, who is a candidate from Baliganj for BJP. He's trailing right now, actually. So, but that's nothing to do with the podcast. We recorded the podcast on the last day of campaign, so the work was already done. Comes across as a very well-read and well-educated guy, young face, of course. So he could be an important person in the BJP mix of things for the next Lok Sabha election. It was a good perspective hearing from him on how it's an uphill task for the party in the Calcutta region. At the same time, how the party has grown in the rest of the state. I also spoke to Sudhir Mehta and Amit Paranjpe on the Pune fight of Pune against the pandemic. So yesterday was Maharashtra Day, and we thought that what better day to essentially bring out a resilient fight which Pune industry associations have put up against the pandemic in terms of contributing money, getting the healthcare infrastructure improved in the city. And Pune today has got the highest number of ventilators in the country for any city, which was largely made possible through this initiative called Pune Platform for COVID Response. So, very interesting and very, very passionate conversation. Sudhir is a CEO of one of the industries in one of the MSMEs in Pune. And he has really taken a lead personally in making this happen. So, very interesting conversation on how the private sector can supplement the efforts of the government in fighting the pandemic.
Yeah. We also had our first, policy AMA, first of many, right? Where Ashish presented, some of the nuances of, how policy is drafted in India and what are the typical constraints and so on. Vatsa, what do you think about it?
I think something like this was much needed. The words like terms like public policy, etc., kind of shrouded behind a lot of bureaucratic language and so on. So it's necessary to kind of simplify it so people understand how, some of these decisions are made, what is center, what is state, how do you prioritize. And at the end of the day, we have to understand, as Thomas Sowell says, that there are no solutions, only trade-off. So every policy decision is essentially a trade-off where some people benefit and some people unfortunately lose out. And then what can be done to kind of make sure that the playing field is as level as possible for all stakeholders. So all of these are very important things, and these need to be simplified. And people have a lot of questions on these things, and they don't know who to ask about some of these things. So I think in that context, this was a very, very important and a very, very good sort of podcast, which cleared a lot of things, at least for me personally. We also did an episode on the IPL, which you can watch, where we spoke about, the last week, the key performances and so on. So going ahead, that's how it's going to be. Every week, we'll focus on some of the top performances.
Right. Rounding things off, we also did a fantastic episode with Binu and Ramesh of Balutsav. Working with public schools in Karnataka, and they brought out a lot of nuances that a lot of people would not know, right, about education itself at the grassroots. And they're doing some fantastic work. Do check out Balutsav and the episode. All right, moving on. First piece of news, some of the top cricketers in the IPL have donated to India's fight against COVID. Some of the sports top players, including Shikhar Dhawan, Jaydev Unadkat, and Sachin Tendulkar, have announced their contribution towards COVID-19 relief in India. Unadkat stated that 10% of his IPL salary will be contributed for COVID-19 patients. The one announced that he would be making a donation of about 20 lakhs and all the money from post-match individual performance awards. Tendulkar donated 1 crore to the Mission Oxygen charity, while KKR pace bowler, the Australian Pat Cummins, announced a $50,000 donation. What's up? IPL has been panned as a waste of money from some quarters, right? But these people are, you know, trying to change that image, right? What are your thoughts?
So I think there has been a lot of bad press about IPL, you know, the need for having IPL at these times and so on. Personally, I think it's the only bright spot for me in the evenings among all the, you know, gloom and doom kind of news that we hear every day. It at least kind of takes you away from reality for some time and you get to enjoy some good cricket. One thing is that cricketers have always been very responsible socially, right? I don't think this is the first time this is happening. They usually don't like to talk about all the good work that they do. You know, for instance, Steve Waugh had been doing a lot of work with Udayan, which is an NGO in Calcutta, for years now. And he continues to work, you know, and help India even after his retirement. Sachin Tendulkar has supported a charity called Apna Laya, and which has uplifted, you know, and gotten education to thousands of children. But him being a very private person, he also hasn't spoken a lot about it. Likewise, you know, some of the owners of the teams, right, be it JSW when it comes to supplying oxygen, Reliance has supplied oxygen. So overall, the IPL as an ecosystem, you know, be it the team owners or the cricketers, have been very responsible during the IPL as well. So it's not just that they are in a bubble where they're completely locked off from reality and, you know, they're having a good time while people are suffering. They are doing their bit, first and foremost, by making sure the IPL continues, which provides some sort of an avenue for most people, you know, away from the daily news that we hear. Secondly, the franchises themselves have contributed. We covered that in the previous weekly. Individual cricketers have done a lot, right? So you mentioned Dhawan, Jaydev Unadkar, Rohit Sharma of Mumbai Indians has donated, you know, significant amount of money. Virat Kohli has himself donated money. So, and this has happened across countries, right? So cricketers, you must remember that cricketers themselves don't usually come from the most affluent of backgrounds. So they are pretty connected to reality in terms of what's going on. They would themselves have, you know, family who is suffering right now, you know, close by relatives and so on. And I think they're doing a great job by contributing money. They're also spreading awareness on some of the important things that, you know, a lot of people have spoken about, which is about wearing masks, sanitation and so on, social distancing. All of these are equally important. Money is one part, but that's more on the treatment side. So they're also spreading awareness on the prevention side, which is a great thing. So yeah, net-net, you know, more power to them if they use their star power to, you know, get people to be more aware and spread more awareness. I think it's a great thing.
Yeah, I could not agree more. All right, moving on. Zomato filed their DRHP on Wednesday with SEBI for their $1.1 billion IPO. I think the Zomato IPO has been in the works for possibly a year. We had news reports coming in last year or so that they had cut down monthly burn to less than a million, which was significant for them. And I feel also, I mean, it reflects the trend of, like, you know, from discounting to food ordering becoming a normal behavior for at least urban folks, at least, right? So the valuations floating around are somewhere between $6 or $7 billion. I guess this is also where, you know, private equity valuations meet the reality of Indian markets in some sense, right? The revenue is, I think for 2020 was around 350 million. And so the valuation that they're talking about is about 17x, which is needless to say, very, very steep. Right, similar companies like Grubhub, which is public in the US, is doing around 12x of that, 12x revenue basically. Right, there are also some reports that, you know, growth has been flat and it hasn't increased proportionately and stuff. But I think last year was an exceptional year, right? Something that all of us can agree. And they've been playing catch up in some sense, right? March and April, all of their businesses took a very big hit, and then, you know, since then they've been trying to recover. But Zomato itself is a fantastic story, I would say. It's a 13-year-old business. You know, there were a lot of listings businesses that came during that era, and all of them fell by the wayside. For them to have survived 13 years in a super competitive space, you know, shows that, you know, the team is, the leadership team has fantastic execution chops, right? They pivoted from what they were earlier, which was a listings website, app, whatever, to delivery. They were late to delivery, but then have caught up pretty significantly. And today, I think it's a duopoly between them and Swiggy. They're also one of the first internet companies in India to expand to Middle East and Africa. They did that fairly well, right? And I'm personally excited. I think this year we're going to see some tech startup IPOs like Delivery, Flipkart, Policy Bazaar, Nykaa. All of these are in the works. And yeah, so pretty excited about Zomato. So Ashish, what's up? Will you guys be applying?
Maybe I will apply, but I mean, I think from a larger standpoint, I think it's great that people are, I mean, some of these companies are now going public. So in that sense that they're not seen as just, you know, businesses which will fail or this is a bubble and so on. So they'll provide exits to employees, existing investors. So people will actually, I mean, the wealth will be spread quite a bit. So I am personally more excited by that, you know, than the yeah. valuation and so on.
My IPO luck is very bad, so I don't get any allotment.
yeah. So I've been rejected more times for IPO than by any girl that I've ever quoted, I think. Right? So, so yeah, speaking of exits, I mean, Info Edge is going to make a killing on this. I think last time I read about it, I mean, they still owned a very significant 25%+ of Zomato, right? So Info Edge, of course... Sanjeev Bikhchandani, who was one of the early entrepreneurs with Naukri.com and so on, right? All right, moving on. PharmEasy announced their plan to vaccinate 3 crore people. The platform plans to conduct this through camps and vaccine centers through its 5,000 partner centers across India. Given the current second wave of the pandemic, the government of India has invited private companies to participate in accelerating the vaccination drive. PharmEasy claims to have over 80,000 partner retailers, 5,000 doctors, and a pharma supply chain facility enabling last mile delivery of cold chain products. Ashish, what do you see as the impact of this and also the larger significance of, you know, all of the private players stepping in to solve what is clearly like an unprecedented crisis?
Yeah, I think the vaccination cannot really scale up without the private sector involvement. That is pretty much clear. Good thing is that PharmEasy, which is more a supply chain player rather than a pharmacy player, they have actually taken an initiative. Even this was done even before the May 1 rules came into play. So they have partnered with more than 1,000 organizations and opened links for individual registrations also. So the idea here is that whatever facilities are quote-unquote approved by PharmEasy, the people can go there and get themselves vaccinated as an individual. Otherwise, they will also have partnerships with the organizations. So this could be, again, on-site drives or at the facilities which PharmEasy certifies or approves. So the target which they have put is 3 crore. 3 crore individuals across both the segments, which is people vaccinating themselves and companies vaccinating their employees. I think the key part here, Kerry, is that the supply chain logistics development which have happened in India in the last few years are quite phenomenal, right? Like if you see, e-commerce started about 2 decades ago. From there on, the fact that we have such a commitment on the supply chain where some of these difficult logistics around vaccines, maintaining temperatures, transportation, creating the storage facilities at the last mile, especially in places which are not hospitals or not clinics, right? So creating facilities in those centers. I think some of that is a great success story for Indian logistics in general. And I really hope that even more players participate in this drive. I mean, I think May and potentially some part of June may be a little lacks on the availability of vaccine, but as it scales up, which will happen definitely by, let's say, mid-June, hopefully more players will come in here, because if the private sector takes care of the 10-15 crore employed individuals in India, that could be a huge boost for vaccination from the perspective of the coverage as well as the chance of getting infected, right? Because these are the individuals who move a lot and who work in structured settings and offices and in indoor settings. So players like Farmeasy can really make a difference there in terms of reducing the larger problem of the spread of the pandemic whenever the next wave hits us, which I mean currently is predicted to hit us in October, November. But yeah, I think seems like a great intervention.
Yeah, no, and also office facilities being used as well, right? I mean, because hospitals and healthcare centers are pretty stressed anyway, right? So, yeah. All right, moving on. USA sends India COVID-19 aid worth 100 million last week, right? The Joe Biden administration also redirected its own order of AstraZeneca manufacturing supplies to India, which will allow it to make over 20 million doses of vaccine. It has already dispatched the first batch of COVID relief materials to India, including oxygen cylinders and regulators, rapid diagnostic test kits, and N95 masks. An initial delivery of 1,100 cylinders will remain in India and can be repeatedly refilled at local supply centers, with more plane loads to come. What do you think about this? I mean, there seems to be a little bit of a flip-flop going on here, right?
Yeah, indeed. I mean, so I think it initially the US invoked the DPA and stopped kind of export of some of the materials needed for vaccines. Ashish had spoken about this on an earlier weekly. It affected Novavax or Covavax, as it is known in India, more than Covishield. But then there were some materials needed even for manufacturing Covishield and Covaxin, which were kind of banned and for export. And there was going to be some impact in terms of manufacturing. And I think that's still going to happen, not because the US is blocking export, but because everyone is looking to manufacture vaccines around the world, and there isn't enough of this material going around, right? Now, what they have done is they've at least helped us with the immediate need, right? So, which is the cylinders that you mentioned, oxygen generation units of PSAs, which we will get from the US, PPEs. Likewise, as you mentioned, some amount of AstraZeneca manufacturing supplies. On that, I think it's interesting that the US is sitting on 6 million doses of, or even more, right? I think possibly 60 million doses. I don't remember the exact number, but somewhere in that range, 40 to 60 million doses of AstraZeneca, which will not get approved anytime soon in the US. So if they could actually export some of that, that will help India significantly in the near term. In addition, they're sending some diagnostic tests which will provide quick results. Likewise, remdesivir, which has been in short supply across India, that is another item they're sending. Overall, it's a good thing. I think we've criticized globalism quite a bit, right? But it, in some ways, is what is helping us get through this difficult time right now. So it's not just the US, but also other countries like UK, which are sending some materials which will help us. We must remember that India itself had supplied HCQ and PPEs during the pandemic last year. So some of this is reciprocal. We have also sent vaccines, more than 60 million doses of vaccines, around 66 million, to some of the poorer countries. So we've earned some of this goodwill, which is kind of forcing some of these countries to help us back. So it's not kind of happened in a vacuum. It's a lot of proactive decisions that have been taken by the government in helping out other countries, even when we could have done with some of those materials that the other countries are now kind of acknowledging what we had done for them in the past and are sending some of these materials for us. look, materials are in short supply across the world, right? Especially when it comes to vaccination. So any help should not be seen skeptically, but should be welcome. So I think, in all, while they can possibly do more, yes, but we should be grateful for what they have done. And I just hope that, once things, I mean, they are able to vaccinate more of their population, they ease some of the other restrictions as well so that we can ramp up our production of vaccines faster.
Yep. Former Prime Minister H.D. Devegowda addressed a letter to Prime Minister Modi. This letter offered suggestions such as decentralizing health administration, war rooms per district, focus on non-urban centers, and increasing accessibility of vaccines. He also stressed on the importance of instituting an insurance program for health workers and communicating between state governments. The former Prime Minister closed his letter by suggesting banning large public gatherings and postponing state elections while focusing on building large-scale medical infrastructure. Ashish, your thoughts?
Interesting. His letter came right after ex-Prime Minister Manmohan Singh had written a similar letter with three or four suggestions on the vaccination part, basically. His suggestions were more focused on the process of vaccination. That letter did not meet get a very kind response from the BJP and from the government, right? The response came from Health Minister Dr. Harshvardhan and not from the PM. The response also was kind of sharp and acerbic. I guess the issue there was that the Congress government, especially in Chhattisgarh, where they refused to use Covaxin and then later on claimed that there was a vaccine shortage. I think those kind of issues were probably at the back of the mind, which could have triggered that response. In the sense that Manmohan Singh did not criticize that kind of behavior. So some of the vaccine hesitancy which has got created. So in contrast, this letter which was written last Monday, this and the letter which Devgora wrote was a slightly broader had a slightly broader framework in the sense that he spoke about things like giving grace marks for NEET examination where the doctors had participated as a COVID warrior or in the COVID care centers. He spoke about state governments talking informally, creating a network of information exchange for best practices and also for ensuring that the virus doesn't spread from one state to another state if there's an issue. He spoke about very interestingly about vaccinating children, 12 to 15 years age group, which currently, of course, we are not aiming for at all in India. And then he made a suggestion that there should be a vaccination production center, state-of-the-art center, one in North India and one in South India, which can be used for future. I mean, in any case, even COVID-19 is not going away permanently, right? We wouldn't even need vaccinations at least for the next year or maybe even 2 years. So that could be a very practical suggestion. And then PM Modi apparently called him a couple of days later, which he himself put out as a tweet and acknowledged the letter and said that they were going to work on it. So interesting federalism there, and in the sense that the suggestions made were quite practical and both short-term and medium-term suggestions, and they were reciprocated. So I think some of this is good because one issue which we see in the current pandemic is that the states do not always, I mean, there's not much coordination across states, right? Even within states, there's a problem, but definitely across states, there's a problem which is both logistical in nature and given the easy movement of people and frequent movement of people in India across states, the chances that one outbreak will become a national outbreak are anyway high. We've seen this in the second wave also, where there were a few states at a high number, and then eventually the people movement will ensure that the disease spreads across the country. So in that sense, it was a good gesture from ex-PM Devgowda. And let's see what gets implemented from those from that laundry list which he had.
You know, I missed that pronunciation of Devagoda's name, so sorry, that was just a joke. All right, moving on. So that's a wrap from us this week. Well, I mean, thank you again for all of the love and support that you guys have been showing, right? plenty of comments, and you know, this really is very, very encouraging. Ashish, what's anything that struck your fancy this week?
I mean, we had like 5 episodes, so there's a lot of work this week. That was the first thing that struck me.
Yeah, busy week.
Yeah, and I think that probably hasn't given us enough time to, promote all the episodes, let's say. I think got mixed up a little bit, the schedule wise. But unfortunately, some of them were like pressing compulsions in terms of the dates and so on. Hopefully, we can spread across this better. I think in April, we had this issue where we had a big gap between the first and the second episode in the month. I think it was 1st April and 13th April, and then a lot of things happened later after that. So hopefully, get a scheduling me onward.
Yeah, things stacked up, I guess, this month, right?
No, I think, especially some things were planned, like, the IPL episodes on Saturday, and then May 1st, we had to do an episode considering the significance of the day. So some of that has happened, but it's good. I think the momentum is there in terms of 7-8 episodes a month covering, the key topics that others are not discussing. So I think that's the great thing.
Yeah. No, and I think April, I'm just looking at it, right? So April 1st, I think we did 105. That was episode number 105. And yesterday, what we put out was 113. So quite a busy month also. Yeah. All right. Before we leave, we'd like to announce a premium subscribers only episode where we will be covering the significance of Ayodhya, Mathura and Kashi, right? And I think we'll be doing this with Vivek Khaitan, who you've heard multiple times before. Vivek is a history enthusiast and perhaps one of the most compelling speakers on these matters. You can check out an earlier episode where we did the Ram Janmabhoomi movement with him and Rohit Jayaraman. And it's going to be very comprehensive, engaging, and we're going to address all facets of this, right? Historical, political, and cultural. Ashish Vatsa, what are you looking forward to?
I think this will be a good episode. Vivek is quite an authority on this topic. He's a student of history as well, so he has studied some of these as part of his, the education, I mean, the degree programs which he has taken up. And he has written and spoken about this quite extensively. So I think it's like a good 1 hour package talking about the three movements which have defined the political, discourse over the last few years. And especially the Ayodhya one, which has got resolved, and it has a 500 years history otherwise. So looking forward to his insights on how these issues have shaped the political and the social narrative.
Yeah, I think, these issues have always affected social consciousness, especially in these regions. They may not have been politically significant. Ram Janmabhoomi had its time where it was politically significant. But these have always been socially significant. And a lot of information is not available on what you would call as mainstream media in terms of the history and what actually happened, in history and how these movements shaped up over time. So I am definitely looking forward to understanding some of those details. It will be a really, really good episode.
Yeah. So do check out our premium subscription plans, that's Plus and Prime on YouTube, right? So for as little as 99 rupees a month, you can engage with us a little more on all of these episodes and AMAs that we're putting out, right? So that's it from us this week. Hope you're all staying safe and taking care of yourselves and your family. So from Ashish, Vatsa and myself, thank you and see you again next week.